Let's start with a few facts that none of your listeners, or very few, will ever have heard. Darwin's first ambition was to be a minister of the state church of England, and he in fact went entirely through a theological school training. What's interesting about the state church of England is that you can't get, and for hundreds of years couldn't get, any preferment unless you were a member of the state church of England. And what did the state church teach? Well, you can go to the Book of Common Prayer and find the homily of obedience, which says flatly that everything from the lowest insect to the highest king is put in that place by God, and God doesn't want people to get out of their place, so that you have this perfectly organized divine system. Somewhere along the time of Mr. Darwin's boyhood, this idea that these placements were divinely ordained began to wear thin, and that jeopardized the social and economic structure of the most powerful country and countries on earth. So what came along was Mr. Darwin, who said exactly the same thing, only now it was scientific. Mm-hmm. Put big quotes around that. Remember, he was trained as a minister, and he said that biology had put everything in these precise places, and that's where they were supposed to stay. And then in his later book, Descent of Man, he said that if these things got out of their place and the good stuff crossbred with the bad stuff, evolution would march backward into the swirling mists of the dawnless past. I mean, that's pretty creepy. Now, I'll tell you something about Darwin that absolutely a tiny handful of people, no one else knows. Darwin was spectacularly wealthy. You won't find that in any text.
No, I didn't know that.
Spectacularly wealthy. He had the Wedgwood fortune, the China, and in those days, that was the high-tech, high art everyone had to have if they were going to be. So Darwin's associates weren't the man in the street or the woman in the street. They were kings and dukes and earls. Darwin's family was in the inner circle of the British throne.
It sounds like he loved being there.
Well, imagine what he now offers not only to the crowned heads of England, but of Germany and Europe and as far away as Japan, George. What he offered was a perfect scientific justification to nail people into these boxes that we call classes, not by accident, and it's justified. You're protecting the advancement of the human race. Now, obviously, you don't tell parents that, and you don't tell principals or superintendents that, but you can live with yourself. You can look in the mirror and say, well, we've got all the bad stuff locked up. And it's John Calvin, the great theologian in the 16th century, said, there's so many of these bad people, or the reprobate, he called them, that we're going to have to teach them to police one another, because there's not enough of us to lock them in place so they won't cause trouble. Now, let me tell you something else that nobody, I mean, nobody seems to know about Mr. Darwin. First of all, he was the cousin of a guy named Thomas Malthus, who's taught in every freshman biology or sociology course in college, and in some high schools too. Malthus said that people were breeding faster than our power to feed them, and that there was no way ever that food increased arithmetically, he said, 1, 2, 3,
mm-hmm.
but people increased geometrically, 2, 4, 8, 16. So he said that the human race will put itself out of business unless some way is found to give these
Exterminate us?
Well, he said that they should be given short, brutish lives, because that was actually a kindness, since there was no room for them, that if you shortened their life by working them to death or stressing them to death, you're actually doing them a favor.
See, now, that's always been my theory of what these globalists want to do with all of us.
Oh, my God. Look, your listeners should not believe that they heard John Gatto say this. Just go to Malthus's essay on population. It's in every library in the United States. It's in every college in the United States. Just read it. He's quite a clear writer. He says there's no way out of this except working and stressing these people to death. Hey.
That's what they're doing to us.
But that was Darwin's. So Darwin, he was older. So Darwin grew up looking fondly on cousin Malthus, who was already being considered the friend of the establishment
mm-hmm.
across Europe. Now, Darwin's first cousin, slightly younger than himself, was a person called Francis Galton. Now, he's less known, but not unknown at all in college courses. Galton is considered widely to be, by psychometricians, people who measure the quality of mind, or at least pretend to, he's considered to be the single brightest human being who ever lived. This is Darwin's cousin. And what Galton did was to create a pseudoscience called eugenics,
oh my,
which taught how to keep the bad stuff in its place. And then he came to the United States a number of times and anointed various heads of the eugenic mission.
So he started this.
He not only started it, he invented the whole idea of reducing all of the growing up time to numbers, to formulae based on numbers, to lock people in their place with numbers, because politically, then you can, and socially, you can then justify, well, look at this kid's numbers. We can't let him go to college, et cetera, et cetera.
Amazing. Just amazing. And it started so long ago, yet it continues.
Well, it continues, and people should understand again, because I'm absolutely certain that there are people who are in on the continuation. But you don't need that to be true. All you need to do is set up a system of incentives and disincentives, and the thing will perpetuate itself forever. And, of course, that's what we've done through the licensing system.